You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
This week there was an educational forum in Vancouver titled No Fracking Way. And you immediately think, what the F was that about? Well, it was about the latest development in extracting gas by a process of using massive water pressure to fracture shale rock deep, deep beneath the surface of the earth. Fracturing rock, triggering tiny earthquakes, is called fracking. It results in the release of shale gas. Ben Parfit recently completed a major study of the dangers posed by fracking. His study is titled Fracture Lines. Ben Parfit is an award-winning journalist and a resource analyst for the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. He was one of the speakers at the forum No Fracking Way, and Ben joins me by phone from his home in Victoria. Good morning, Ben, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Can you tell us a little more about the fracking process?
Yes. Fracking, particularly in shale formations, involves drilling deep down into the earth and then drilling a very long way horizontally through a section of targeted shale that has gas in it. Once companies have done drilling horizontally through those zones, they then pump under tremendous pressure very large volumes of water into the drill hole to fracture or crack the surrounding rock. And by fracturing it, the rock then releases its trapped gases.
Okay, well, that's the process. And where is it being used in North America?
Well, it has been used and is being used increasingly all over North America, but it really has its origins in an area called the Barnett Shale in Texas. And beginning a little over 10 years ago, companies started to bring together the horizontal drilling technology along with pumping large amounts of water into play in that area, and also did a third thing, which is really critical to the process. They started to put a number of wells on each pad. So the coming together of those three things began in the Barnett Shale area of Texas. There are major shale deposits throughout the United States. An area of great controversy right now is in an area called the Marcellus Shale, which underlies portions of New York State, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. There's a great deal of concern in the Marcellus because of proposed developments in the Catskills watershed, which is the major water supply for New York City and 8 million water users in that city.
And why are we seeing this sudden expansion in the the use of this fracking?
We're seeing a rapid expansion in fracking in what are called unconventional zones like shale formations, largely because conventional sources are drying up. So with the advancements in this technology, it's now believed that there is a massive amount of gas now available, and that includes gas from, of course, northern British Columbia, where there are two major shale zones under development right now. One, the Horn River Basin near the community of Fort Nelson, and further to the south in the South Peace region around Fort St. John, the Montney Basin.
Well, let's focus for a moment on those two developments. Where does the water used in these fracking operations in northern BC come from?
Well, it comes from multiple sources. Principally, to date, it has been coming from streams, rivers, and lakes, with companies gaining access to this water principally through short-term water-taking permits that have been issued by the Provincial Energy Regulator, the Oil and Gas Commission. But there's also water that is coming from other sources. And that includes wells on farmers' properties, pits that are being dug on farmers' properties, a massive number of burrow pits that are being dug in proximity to gas wells in the far north in particular. These pits are typically dug to provide fill for roads and well pads, but in the spring period, the freshet period, they're filling with water. So water is being used from those sources as well. Very importantly, I think we need to highlight the fact that companies are also turning to less conventional sources for water. So in the Horn River Basin, for example, companies have dug or drilled deep into the earth and are now accessing water from saline aquifers. So this is very, very salty groundwater that is being used. And there is a considerable amount of water that is being reused for fracking. So the wastewater coming back is being stored and reused. But having said that, there is a tremendous surge in water applications that is occurring in the province. And there is a great deal of concern, particularly in the Northeast, being expressed by residents who live in proximity to where these fracking operations are occurring, because they're seeing firsthand just how much water is coming into play.
And how much water are we talking about?
We're talking about immense volumes of water. It's interesting to note that British Columbian companies have taken the technological advancements in the Barnett Shale. They've taken that American know-how and run with it like never before. We're seeing record volumes of water used at single fracking operations in British Columbia, the industry setting and claiming to have set world records for the amount of water used. To give people an idea of what we're talking about, early last year, between January and April, there was a continuous fracking operation at one multi-well pad in an area called Two Island Lake in the Horn River Basin to the north and east of Fort Nelson. Apache Canada, a subsidiary of Apache Corporation of Houston, pumped the equivalent of 980,000 cubic meters of water underground at one multi-well pad. To give people an idea of what that means, the average Olympic swimming pool holds 2,500 cubic meters of water, so we're talking about well over 300 Olympic swimming pools of water being channeled underground at that one site. Since that record was established early last year, it has been broken by a considerable margin by Encana Corporation, very near to the same site that Apache set the record. And at that multi-well site, they pumped the equivalent of nearly 1.5 million cubic meters of water underground. So this is a very, very large amount of water that is being pumped underground. Now, Encana is leading the industry with innovations in which deeply buried saline water is being used. But again, I have to stress that while there is innovation in some regards, we are still faced with the fact that the companies are looking to acquire rights to considerable water volumes, fresh water volumes, over time to complete these fracking operations.
It sounds like they're using massive amounts of water. What is being done to the environment, the water supplies, as well as the other environment around these fracking operations?
Well, this is a key question that I think in some respects remains to be answered, because the industry really is in its infancy in British Columbia. We know at the Apache Canada operations that the net result of these water drawdowns was that the surface of Two Island Lake fell by 15 centimeters while these fracking operations were underway. We also know that almost half of the water that the company used in this fracking operation came from sources that the company didn't even have permits for. This was the water that came from this massive network of burrow pits that I spoke of a couple of moments ago. The big concern with fracking as it proceeds forward is that as more wells are drilled and as more fracking occurs, there can be unforeseen events between wells. And this is a major cause for concern in the Montney Basin to the south, where there is a lot of sour gas in play. Sour gas contains hydrogen sulfide, which at levels of just 300 parts per million can render people unconscious and kill them. We know that in 2009 there was a significant uncontrolled release of 30,000 cubic meters of sour gas, and we now know that the release of that gas was traceable to a buildup of sand, which is also used in the fracking process, in the well piping. There was enough of that sand that it corroded the pipes, leading to a pipe break, and the end result was this uncontrolled release. We also know that the Oil and Gas Commission, the energy regulator, issued a public safety advisory last year in which it noted that there had to date been 18 unwanted communications between wells. And one can expect that as fracking activities expand in the province, that if great care is not taken in where wells are positioned, that we could see more of these communications between wells. And the great fear there is that that could lead to unwanted migrations of gas or unwanted migrations of contaminated water. And in the United States, where fracking activities are well advanced in shallow coal bed methane zones, as well as in deeper buried shale zones, there is evidence of water contamination resulting from these activities.
Well, you've mentioned that the industry is in its infancy. I'm guessing that the regulation of the industry is also in its infancy. Is that the case?
Yes, that is. I think we can be encouraged by the fact that the Oil and Gas Commission is starting to get its is making strides in better regulating water usage. They appointed a hydrologist last year. They have recently issued directives that will require companies moving forward to report on all of their water usage from the different sources that they currently get water from. This is something to be encouraged by. My more general concern, though, is that I believe it does not make sense for the energy regulator to be the one that is assigning water rights. I would feel far more comfortable, and I believe people in the region would feel far more comfortable, if all water assigning authorities rested with the environmental regulator as opposed to the energy regulator. To date, most of the water that the industry has received rights to pump has come from the Oil and Gas Commission. There's a growing amount of water that the industry is applying for that will require approval from provincial environment officials, but it's still the case that very large volumes of water are assigned by the energy regulator to energy companies, and energy companies very significantly are the only companies in the province that can get water rights assigned to them by anyone other than provincial water officials. So I would like to see all water assignment authorities resting with one provincial agency, because I believe that that's what we need moving forward to ensure that our shared water resources are properly managed.
Again, you mentioned the water issue. I'm wondering, for these water permits, these short-term water permits that you talked about, how much are corporations required to pay for the use of the water?
Well, it's a very good question. The short-term permits that have been issued to date have carried no fee at all. So companies have paid $0 for, you know, gaining rights to use hundreds of thousands of cubic meters of water. Under longer-term water licenses, which are issued by provincial environment officials, There is a nominal water rental fee that is associated with those licenses, but I stress that it's nominal. So companies that have longer-term licenses that would be engaged in fracking would be paying the equivalent of about $2.70 for every Olympic swimming pool's worth of water that they used. I think that this issue of pricing is one that, again, we should be focusing on moving forward, because pricing the resource at a proper rate would very clearly drive innovation and drive conservation. And, you know, every cubic meter of water that is conserved is one cubic meter less that the industry has to go find from a river, lake, stream, or groundwater source.
In your report, you have 13 recommendations. Can you identify, or can you tell us briefly, three of the key recommendations that you'd like to see taken up by the provincial government?
Yeah, I mean, I think without question, one of the most important things that we need to see moving forward is full, very rigorous reporting on all water used and the sources that water use, the sources for that water use. We need to know where the water is going, where the wastewater produced from the industry is going, and it needs to be reported in a timely way. And I think we will see that happen in British Columbia, and I'm happy that outcome is achievable and something that we will see happening, I think, during the course of this year. I think the other thing we need is to say that there are places where fracking activities don't belong because of concerns over protecting the environment and freshwater resources. And I think the other thing we desperately need is we need a tax in place, a production tax in place that can be used to fund key activities that would better safeguard our resources. So I'd like to see a production tax on shale gas with the revenues from that tax being used to fund a network of test wells, that kind of thing.
Thanks so much, Ben. It's been highly informative.
Well, thank you very much for having me and for your interest.
I've been speaking with Ben Parfitt. He is an award-winning journalist and a resource analyst for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. His study is titled Fracture Lines.